Blog Talk Radio.
Professor Fernando Uribe. I want to welcome you all here this evening, the 1st of March, 2018. Of course, I want to thank you for listening in from wherever you are here throughout the Garden State and, of course, throughout the good old U.S. of A. Happy Women's History Month to all the ladies throughout the land here listening tonight on Politically Direct. You can always write to the show's inbox, folks, which is politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. If you have a guest suggestion or a topic you want me to talk about, write to the show, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. And don't forget to follow the show on Instagram @politicallydirectnj. You can also follow me directly @your_favorite_Fernando. Of course, follow me on Twitter. That's greatly appreciated @FernandoUribeJr. And for all of you Facebook subscribers, again, I ask you to please go to the page for Politically Direct. Like it, of course, and I ask you to tell your friends to do the same. Now, I do want to hear from you tonight, folks. Don't be shy. Call me toll free, 818-572-8032. Once again, 818-572-8032. Our toll-free number is brought to you by Insider NJ. Now, don't forget to check out Insider NJ, ladies and gentlemen, every single day by going to www.insidernj.com for the best coverage of the political scene throughout the state of New Jersey. And, of course, as always, the opinions and views expressed tonight and every week on Politically Direct are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of Insider NJ, the management, the journalists, or staff. Now, folks, normally I do have an opening monologue with my first shot, but actually I'm going to skip that today to get to my exclusive guest here, joining us live here tonight, a dear friend of the show and a good buddy of mine, Second Amendment advocate, Mr. Anthony Calandro, representing Gun for Hire in Woodland Park. Anthony, welcome to Politically Direct, sir.
Professor, thank you, and thank you for having me on the show today.
Oh, it's great. Let's get right to it. Anthony, I know you're one of the biggest Second Amendment advocates here in the state of New Jersey, if not anywhere in the country that I know personally. I know it's been a busy couple of days for you in Trenton. Can you tell our listeners tonight what that experience has been with the legislature?
Well, it never stops in New Jersey, and us law-abiding citizens are constantly fighting for our God-given rights and our constitutional rights in this state. So I was down in Trenton yesterday where they were hearing seven bills. Actually, they dropped it down to six bills in the Assembly Committee, the Judiciary Committee, and basically passing laws that are going to usurp our right to trial, right to jury, due process, and turning a million gun owners in New Jersey into criminals.
Wow, that's a lot to digest today. Anthony, how convincing were you, do you think, in front of the legislators in Trenton the last couple of days?
Not convincing at all. It falls on deaf ears. They've already made up their mind. It's a partisan thing. The committee is 4 Democrats to 2 Republicans, and almost all of the bills voted along party lines, and the Senate is stacked against us as well. And then Governor Murphy already made it clear that he will sign every anti-gun piece of legislation that exists that gets put on his desk. So it's going to be a long 4 years for us taxpaying law-abiding citizens.
Well, Anthony, again, folks, if you just joined us, you're live on the program a little 5 minutes past the hour here on the East Coast. Anthony Calandro, a great Second Amendment advocate and the owner of Gun for Hire in Woodland Park. I've had a chance to go there and shoot. It's a great time, and I'll definitely give you some information later on, ladies and gentlemen, about their website and his venue. Anthony, obviously gun reform, gun rights, the issue of guns and the Second Amendment have been in the news cycle for many, many days now, certainly not just because of the unfortunate incident that happened in Parkland, Florida, but certainly whenever there is a school shooting or any sort of shooting, for that matter, out in the public square, certainly citizens, legislators, both at the state and federal level, start to, you know, sort of get sanctimonious maybe and get on a soapbox. And certainly my heart goes out to families that are affected by gun violence. But it goes beyond that, doesn't it? Because it seems perhaps for a lot of Second Amendment advocates and responsible gun owners that they're the ones under attack, right?
Yes, because people think that we don't – because we're Second Amendment advocates and we own guns and we shoot for sport – excuse me, I'm not a hunter, but they think because when a tragedy happens, like, we don't have a heart. I mean, I feel for these families and these kids and these tragedies. But, you know, every time something like this happens, instead of focusing on fixing the issues, instead of focusing on a national background check, instead of focusing on addressing mental health issues, and more importantly, violence in our society, you know, the people that make the movies and make the video games, all they show is gunplay and wanton murder and butchering and everything, and our kids get desensitized to it. And they're the first people to step out and call for gun control. But you don't see anybody from the NRA making videos showing bad gun handling or accidents with guns and perpetuating violence. So we're always getting attacked for it. I said yesterday in Trenton, I said, you know, blaming the 5 million NRA members for a gun tragedy is like blaming the Automobile Association of America when someone has a car accident.
You know what? That's a great analogy, and I'm glad you put that out there for the record, because I think it's important to sort of illustrate that sometimes the narrative gets corrupted. You know, Anthony, one of the things I admire a lot about you, because I know you're a very big advocate about responsible gun ownership, but here in New Jersey, for our listeners tonight that maybe are not aware of how stringent it is, for example, we've talked off the air. I mean, I'm still in the process, for example, of applying for a permit, and it's laborious. It's something that is very, very draining. And I'm still not, you know, I haven't heard back yet from the New Jersey State Police or anything else. And it's frustrating because I think like any other responsible citizen, you know, we want the right to protect ourselves, protect our families. And if you've had the chance to talk to legislators, which has been, and whether or not you want to drop her name or not, I don't know, but which legislators have been receptive to you and which are the ones have just been outright defiant and not even listening to you and just being outright dismissive?
Again, it's always along party lines. I've had plenty of Republican legislators come to my range, shoot in my range. Felix Roque's been to my range, who should have been our next Carlos Rendo, should have been the next legislator. Michael Patrick Carroll's been here. The Bucos have been here. But as far as Democrats, none of them will set foot in here, except there's always an anomaly. The mayor of Woodland Park, where my range is, Mayor Keith Kazmark, is probably the most moderate Democrat I've ever met with an open mind, and he's been to the range. He's been on my radio show, my podcast as well. And it's funny because whenever the gun control issues come up, he'll call me and ask me for my opinion, which is very rare because I only get phone calls from Republican legislators asking me my opinion on a bill. I never get someone from the other side of the aisle to ask us how it would affect the law-abiding citizens. So I have to commend Mayor Kazmark, the mayor of Woodland Park.
Now, Anthony, one of the things that maybe our listeners need an education on about the issue concerning gun reform or gun rights in New Jersey, let me put it out this way. What exactly stops the narrative about responsible background checks? Why isn't there sort of a national – I mean, you know, we have sort of like national laws about the minimum wage and about other federal statutes. Why has there been just sort of this, not hesitation, but this inability to really get a concise background check law passed either federally, first of all, and even in Trenton? What's been the problem in your opinion?
We have a national instant background check. Professor, when you finally get your permits to buy your gun, when you go to a gun store in the state of New Jersey, they're going to do an instant background check on you. So all 50 states have a NICS check. When you go to a gun store or a reputable dealer, they have to run a national instant background check on you. The problem is that the federal and state agencies do not report the data. there's a huge gap there where they're not following it up. That's one of the reasons why us gun people get ticked off when the government says they want to create another watchdog bureaucracy to watch us when they can't manage the one now. In New Jersey, you're going to buy a gun. If you tried, if you had the cops at your house one time for a domestic or threatening someone, you'll never be able to buy a gun in New Jersey. But in Parkland, the police were there 44 times. The Texas shooter was in the Air Force, domestic abuse, his girlfriend and three-year-old stepson, and the Air Force failed to report his history when they dishonorably discharged him, and he was allowed to buy that rifle. So, again, we have a failure in the system. So that was the reason why the Republicans fought so hard on the terrorist watch list, because garbage in is garbage out. It's only as good as the data you're going to put into it. So it scares me. I believe that we should enforce and we should have a national system like New Jersey. The problem is once we have that system and then another mass shooting occurs, who do we blame next? It always comes back to blaming the gun.
You know what? And I was about to say that seems to be the narrative that's been quite popular. Now, one of the things that stands out for me, Anthony, about your advocacy, and obviously – As a successful small business owner, advocating for responsible gun ownership and I know firsthand because I've been to Gun for Hire. And for anyone that hasn't been there in Woodland Park, it's a wonderful venue. You offer courses. You offer a lot of different workshops and seminars that are monumentally beneficial to patrons that go in there. And I'm sure you've offered them to legislators and other elected officials. How frustrating is it for you? Because I know as a homeowner and a taxpayer here in New Jersey, there's a very different political climate now in Trenton. Never mind the legislature, but right now, certainly, there's a very different narrative that's coming out of the governor's office. But is it any different than what we had the last 8 years? Because it seems for a lot of residents in New Jersey, Governor Christie didn't really seem very proactive either about this issue. Am I wrong there in that perception?
Nope. You were 100% right. What Christie did for us gun owners was he pretty much held the line for 8 years. But as far as addressing other issues, I mean, let's face it. Christie was out of the state half the time campaigning because he had aspirations of higher office. You know, I think most people get into politics with good intentions. And then once they're in office, it's all about self-preservation. And they forget and they lose, you know, their eyes are no longer on the prize of what they started to get into anymore. You know, I just see it like yesterday. I mean, I get to the committee rooms 9 o'clock in the morning. They're supposed to start. The hearings are supposed to start 11 o'clock. We sit below our elected officials who are supposed to be public servants. Where we sit, they call it the well. So we sit down in the well, right? The committee hearings are supposed to start at 11. They don't start until 11:45. While you're up there giving heartfelt testimony, the legislators are checking their phones, whispering amongst each other, and placing their lunch orders. Then they slip out one at a time and eat and come back in, missing those parts of the testimony. I get called up 4 o'clock. Now, I've been up since 5 in the morning. I walked in that room at 9. Nothing to drink, nothing to eat. It's like it's staged that way. You know, it's like a psychological beating that they put you through. And they're supposed to be public servants. Yet we're there kissing their ring.
You know, that's reprehensible. That's reprehensible, and I'm sorry you went through that. And as a taxpayer, it's disappointing to see that's what our tax dollars are going to. But beyond sort of just critiquing the legislature, because we could do that for hours here on the show. But Anthony, one of the things that concerns me, and again, politics becomes so convoluted along party lines. And whenever it comes to tragedies, whether it's the recent incident in Parkland, Florida, whether it's the shooting in Las Vegas, which still raises a lot of questions, other school shootings, other incidents that have taken place across the country, one of the things that really disappoints me, again, as a taxpayer, is – and I'm sure they're tapping my phone as we speak – but I'm really disappointed about – the ineptitude, I think, that's being demonstrated at the highest levels of law enforcement, and I mean specifically the FBI. And I know people that work in the agency. I know people that are very hardworking type of agents, and certainly, but it just seems like at the federal level, the federal government just wants you to sit on their hands, feed a certain narrative or rhetoric, and regardless of who's in office now, whether it's the 45th president Donald J. Trump or the 44th with Barack Obama. I mean, clearly it seems that at the federal level, there's just this reluctancy to really address this. How concerned are you about this? Because it just seems like the first thing that comes to mind, well, lobbyists are ruining government and lobbyists are contaminating the political process because effective, you know, gun laws are not being passed by Congress. When you hear that narrative, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
I feel that way, too. I've been joking for years. I think our legislators should wear NASCAR-style jackets with all their contributors, sponsors, logos like Pfizer and, you know, the GM Monsanto on them and everything else. They should all have all the people that have bought them. You know, everybody says, you know, we don't need term limits because we have the ballot box. But our legislators, incumbents, have a 97% reelection rate. Once somebody's in and they're beholden to the big companies, it's almost impossible to ouster somebody. And, you know, our forefathers didn't want career politicians. And when we have people like Dianne Feinstein, she's 84 years old. She's running for reelection for Senate. She's going to be 92 when she finishes her term. I mean, really? You've been in office 50 years? And they all go in as civil servants, and they leave as multimillionaires.
Yeah, that's
the
crazy,
system
right?
Is broken.
You're talking about a breakdown.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. No, I just want to say that it's crazy when you think about what the salary is for an elected official at the federal level. And when they walk out, I mean, it's like, wait a minute. Can I check your ATM receipt? Can I check your balance when possible? Because it's kind of funny. Now, in fairness, though, Anthony, one of the things I have to say that – here, you know, New Jersey certainly is a very different political climate than the state of Florida, the state of Texas, the state of California, and everywhere in between in the middle, you know, the heartland of the United States. But one of the things that stands out for me here, and I know you've been a very vocal person. I know we follow each other's social media. I know you've always been a very articulate and responsible, not just a gun owner, but a small business owner, a citizen. And you've always been responsible with your content. What does it say whenever you've come out politically with either an opinion or a narrative expressing your disapproval about, let's say, our current governor who just got sworn in about a little less than a month ago, or even our two United States senators, or even some representatives in the House? When you've expressed your opinions, has there been any backlash? Has someone privately messaged you and said, you know, Anthony, calm down, dude. Like, give me a break. Like, what you're putting out there is very bombastic and inflammatory. Have you heard that?
Yes.
Or have you just heard for the most part people saying, hey, Anthony, cheers.
No, I've had people reach out to me, and I tell them, listen, I'm a constituent. They're my elected official. I can say anything I want to them. That's part of their job as an elected official. Especially on Facebook, you get that little thing that says you're commenting as a constituent. As a constituent, I feel I can say anything I want to them because they're supposed to work for me. You know, going backtracking on something you said before about the breakdowns in the FBI, if you want a perfect example of how the federal government works anything, just go visit a post office one day. That's how our federal government system works. Everything's broken down. It's all to the lowest common denominator. There's just gaps in every system. There's no motivation, no ambition or anything. I'm not knocking postal workers, but that's what healthcare will be like if it gets nationalized and everything else. You can't have a business as big as the post office and run it efficiently. You'd need to have separate satellite divisions. It would be like me or you owning a company and having 5,000 managers report directly to us. Could you imagine what your day would be like?
I'd have less hair than I already do. That'd be crazy. That'd be crazy. Now, Anthony, one of the things that I know as a constituent and as a taxpayer, I know you've been very vocal about your concerns regarding Governor Murphy. I know that last summer when he campaigned, and to be very fair about something too, I think I've said this on the program before, last year's gubernatorial election I think was probably one of the most uninspiring elections I can ever remember. And the reason I say this is because, you know, we had a candidate on the Republican side that, listen, Kim Guadagno was up a tremendous hill because I think, and again, and I know Governor Christie, you know, he was very nice to me when I ran for state assembly some years ago. I don't think he worked very hard for the state Republican Party, per se. I think he did the Republican brand an immense disservice in New Jersey. And I think that cost Kim a lot of votes, too. I think people just stayed home. But on the flip side, I think that, you know, then-candidate Murphy was really proactive in just hitting certain trigger words that resonated with certain demographics in the state, whether it was about gun reform, whether it was about the minimum wage, whether it was about immigration reform. But one of the things that I found specifically interesting about last year's campaign was that the governor seemed, then candidate Murphy, now the governor, he seemed to be pandering to certain demographics in the state, and that might have turned some people off. Because as you can tell from numbers, I mean, Anthony, we had one of the lowest voter turnouts in state history. I mean, a good amount of people stayed home last November, which, you know, and again, if you know anything about the electorate here in New Jersey, there are three registered Democrats for every one registered Republican. So Republicans always face an uphill battle in New Jersey anyway, electorally. But when you see how he campaigned and to what he's, you know, trying to sort of influence now in terms of policy, if you sat in a room with Governor Murphy, what would you tell him specifically about gun reform in New Jersey or what needs to be better? What would you tell the governor right now?
He probably won't want to talk to me because the first thing I would tell him is there's nothing more repulsive than a rich socialist, right? But to be honest with you, and you know, and to quote Margaret Thatcher, you know, the socialism only works until you run out of everybody else's money, right? What happened was people chose Murphy because they chose free stuff over freedom. He went after the police and fire unions. He went after the teacher unions. He promised them everything, and they got the vote out for him because that's all they were concerned about. But the first thing I would tell Murphy is show me where, anywhere, any type of gun law is followed by a criminal. It doesn't happen. What we do is we're fighting it's logic and emotion, right? When I'm talking gun logic, an anti-gunner is talking from emotion. When they start to talk logic to me, I get emotional. So we never meet in the middle. Meanwhile, mass murders are occurring, people are dying, crimes are being committed. So while we continue to follow and fight that narrative, I would tell the governor, people are going to continue to die. Let's address the violence issue. Let's address the mental health issue. And more importantly, how about enforcing the laws that are on the books and locking people up and throwing away the key? I mean, in New Jersey now we have bail reform where you can atrocious assault and battery and rape, you can be out in 2 days with no bail. And then they're finding people are committing crimes over and over again while they're out on bail. It's like we live in a bizarro world now where everything is upside down and the inmates are running the asylum. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy. You know, You don't know this, Professor, but what happens is we consider ourselves law-abiding citizens, right? But we also consider ourselves law-abiding criminals. If a bad guy with a record has a crime with a gun, let's say he robs a grocery store with a gun, he'll go to county lockup and he'll be in jail a couple of months awaiting trial. What'll happen is his public defender that we pay for will go to prosecutor and say, listen, he's a repeat offender. Let's work out a deal so we don't have a long court trial. The first thing that the prosecutor will drop is the gun charge. And now in New Jersey, we have a thing called the Graves Act, where you automatically do 3 to 5 years if you commit a crime with a firearm. So they will drop the Graves Act. They will drop the possession of the firearm. He'll plead guilty to assault or whatever and get time served and get released in the interest to save the state money. Now, if you get your gun that you acquire and you go to Willowbrook Mall shopping and leave that gun in the trunk of your car, if your car is stolen, you will be found a felon because you were defunct in your duties in protecting that gun. You will go to jail for 3.5 years and you will not have anything to plea bargain. You, sir, will go to jail for 3.5 years where the guy who committed a crime with a gun will get the gun charge dropped and walk free the next day. That's how it works in New Jersey.
Wow,
yes.
That's incredible. I mean, oh my
completely
goodness.
Opposite.
If you just joining us here tonight, 20 minutes past the hour here, it's my pleasure to have Anthony Calandro, an outstanding Second Amendment advocate here on Politically Direct via Insider NJ. Anthony, that's incredible to hear that scenario.
Yep.
I mean, really, is there a way to fix that at all? I mean, or is it just sort of a laborious process?
Well, our criminal justice system, we have a catch and release revolving door criminal justice system. People keep committing the same crimes over and over again and they get caught and they get released. I hear from the police community all the time. They're frustrated. They're like, we just locked this guy up last month and now he's out doing the same thing again. We risk our lives never going back home to our families at night, possibly getting killed. We lock the guy back up 3 days later, guy or girl's back on the street committing the same crimes again. So you can see the frustration. Us law-abiding citizens, Professor, you're going to see when you get your gun, unload it, locked in a case, ammo locked in a separate case, drive directly from your house to the range, directly from the range to the house when you're done, and then lock your gun up in your safe, right? Meanwhile, if your grandfather had passed away and left you a gun and it had high-capacity magazines, over 10 rounds in New Jersey, if you didn't know that and you got pulled over by a cop, you would look at 18 months in prison for every magazine in your possession when you got pulled over. You'd lose your professional licenses because you'd be charged with a felony. Your whole life would be collapsed. And we're talking crimes with no criminal intent. That's the scary part. Governor Christie pardoned over 9 people in his 8 years for crimes just like that, law-abiding citizens who were in the wrong place at the wrong time with no criminal intent.
Wow, that's crazy. Now, compared to other states, even across the river, Anthony, in New York or even Connecticut or in Pennsylvania, what are some differences that our listeners tonight can learn about as it pertains to how tyrannical gun laws are in New Jersey compared to our neighboring states?
Well, Pennsylvania, anybody can carry a gun. If you're over 18 years old, you can buy guns. If you're over 21, you can carry a gun. And you don't read, anything about it being the Wild West. You can own over 15-round magazines in Pennsylvania. New York, the 5 boroughs, which is New York County, has very, very strict gun laws, very discriminatory gun laws, too. And Connecticut has tough gun laws, but you can get a carry permit pretty easily in Connecticut. See, a lot of people don't understand that the NRA was founded in 1871, and it's the oldest civil rights organization in the United States. It predates the NAACP because to own a gun is a civil right. And people don't realize that most of the laws that are put in place to make it harder for people to get firearms were put in place to discriminate against minorities. And the NRA has fought hard against that. The problem is the narrative has gotten spun around by the media for the past 20 years or so. But like you said, you're waiting a long time for your permit. You know, in New Jersey, the law is 30 days. You don't get it in 30 days, it's considered issued. Good luck with that. So, but we see people, inner city people, they'll go to their police department. They can only go a certain day, certain hours. When they go, they're told the detective's not in. Come back in a week. They come back in a week, the detective's on vacation. Come back in another week. How many days off can a hardworking blue-collar person take before they give up and say, well, it's too hard, I'm not going to get my permit? Roadblocks are put up every step of the way, but mostly in the inner cities. When you go to these mostly white, middle-class, upper-middle-class bedroom communities, they can walk into a police department anytime. They can fill out their paperwork. They get their paperwork back in less than 30 days. But if you go to Patterson, Jersey City, Passaic, all they do is put up roadblocks to discriminate against minorities.
Wow, that's really profound. And let me just add this to the conversation, Anthony, because I think it's important to sort of mention, and I want to get your take on it. When you hear about, let's say, certain advocacy groups, forget about the NRA. Let's say you hear about other advocacy groups. Because, for example, the Second Amendment falls under our Bill of Rights. So that in itself is one of our civil liberties. Aren't you concerned, or how disappointed are you when you see, let's say, one of the more preeminent civil liberty organization, for example, the ACLU, nationally or even New Jersey, not being more of an advocate about this? Because, again, the right to own a firearm, the right to bear arms as guaranteed under the Second Amendment, falls under the Bill of Rights. It falls as one of our very treasured civil liberties. Why don't we see more nonprofits or advocacy groups like the ACLU up in arms about this?
Because they're a hotbed of progressives. They only care about the 1st, the 4th, the 15th. They don't care about the Second Amendment. They're not interested in the gun issue. They're interested more in how a baby can decide what its sex is going to be when it's 4 months old or whatever, and the parents can't have any decision in that or whatever. I'm telling you, we live in a bizarro world now. And, I grew up Catholic, and I tell people, when I was a kid, my parents would tell me to write a list of stuff I wanted for Christmas, and whatever I wanted the most would be first on the list, and then my second choice would be second, et cetera, et cetera. I believe the framers of our Constitution and the Bill of Rights put the Second Amendment as second for a reason. It's not the 8th or the 9th Amendment. It's the Second Amendment, because after freedom of speech, expression, and religion, their next most important one was the right to keep and bear arms, because they escaped the tyranny of King George. And that's why it is so important there. I wish their wording was a little better, because everybody confuses militia, but militia at the time was the people. Okay? So the ACLU is definitely sold out on the Second Amendment people. I've had Second Amendment people, minorities, who were denied a firearm, reached out to the ACLU, and they said they weren't interested in their case. It's amazing.
Well, you know what? That's really disappointing, because, you know what, there are plenty of cities in New Jersey. And listen, I'm a lifelong Jersey resident. I take a lot of pride being from here. But I'm always concerned, Anthony, when we read statistics and we read, you know, crime stats in New Jersey, where whether it's Camden or Plainfield or Trenton or Elizabeth, Newark, you know, parts of Jersey City, you name it, there are plenty of municipalities in New Jersey where residents, you know, are at an extreme disadvantage about protecting their homes. You know, there are a lot of municipalities in New Jersey that, you know, you dial 911 and having your local police department isn't exactly a hop, skip, and jump away. This can make the difference between life and death for many residents, where if you're waiting for police, you know, they may not get there at times. And certainly here in New Jersey, we're not subject to home invasions like other states are. I mean, obviously we read about them, but not at a very high rate. But that should be a concern for everybody listening tonight. If you're a resident in New Jersey in high crime areas, you know, the ability to defend yourself is one I think that you should have afforded to you. And when we see these legislators talking about that, Anthony, I mean, how furious do you get, though?
Very furious. You know, there's an old saying, when you need help in seconds, the police arrive in minutes. And, you know, there's a case, Warren versus D.C. Supreme Court. The police do not have a duty to protect you, you know. There's been two major Supreme Court cases. The last one was Warren versus D.C. The police do not have a duty to protect you. The police are usually there after the fact to take a report and try to find the bad guy or get to a conclusion. That's how it works. And it's funny, Professor, because all of those cities you mentioned have been democratically controlled for the past 40, 50, 60 years. And all we've seen is decline through corruption and mismanagement and everything. And I feel really bad. You know, I get so many inner city people. You've been to my range. You've seen the diversity that comes in here.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
I get so many people coming here that I have to help. It's a lot of first-generation immigrants. They go to police department tells them, you can't own a gun. And I'm like, no, they're wrong. You're a citizen now. Or even if you're here on a green card, you can get a gun. You can do. And they bring the paperwork in, I help them fill it out, and they fill it out. And begrudgingly, the police department will issue them their paperwork. And then I'll have business owners, first-generation business owners, own bodegas and laundromats and stuff. And I tell them they can carry a gun on their person, on their property. And they're like, oh, no, I asked the police, and they told me I can't. And then I show them the law where it's legal that they can protect themselves and their family while they're during the course of their business. So it's tough. It's an undertone of changing the narrative and discriminating against immigrants and lower economic people. It's a real class warfare thing when it comes to the legal ownership of guns. And it's blatantly biased and racist. I've seen it over the years. And because I embrace everybody here and treat everybody like family, that's why my business is so successful. I treat everybody like family when they come in here. I don't care. I'm a capitalist. The only color I care about is green.
There you go. God bless you for that one. Anthony, now, is this more of an indictment of just law enforcement in New Jersey? And again, I don't want to paint with a broad brush. I certainly don't want to smear the New Jersey State Police or other municipalities and other police departments, because I certainly don't look at it through blind eyes. But is this more of an indictment of a specific culture or a climate that's being perpetuated by law enforcement in New Jersey about trying to discourage citizens and specifically law-abiding citizens, or is it just a combination of a lot of things at play?
It's a combination of a lot of things in place, but it's prevalent in most areas where you have a high density of minorities. It's always been, you know, people don't realize Jim Crow laws. After the Emancipation Proclamation and the slaves were freed under Lincoln, the southern states passed Jim Crow laws, basically saying you couldn't vote unless you owned property. You couldn't buy guns unless you own property. You couldn't move about freely unless you own property. And that spurred on the 14th Amendment. That's where you can't Equal Protection Act. You can't discriminate against people. But we still see it. Southern states, northern states, eastern, western, or whatever, you'll still see that tone of discrimination for the lower economic people, hence which tend to be either African American or other minorities. Always.
Wow, that's interesting. Folks, again, if you're just joining us here at the bottom of the hour here, it's my pleasure to have Anthony Colandro from Gun for Hire, a great Second Amendment advocate. You know, Anthony, as an academic, I always get discouraged sometimes about interacting with my colleagues because, as we all know, academia is preeminently very liberal, if not outright leftist. And I think you know me personally. I think you've gotten to know my political IQ. I'm a very middle-of-the-road guy. I don't like to lean extreme to either way, but I'm someone that recognizes the importance of preserving our civil liberties, certainly our Second Amendment. And it was interesting. I wanted to run this by you because I know you have all the data on you as well. It was interesting listening to a criminology professor on CNN recently. And listen, I don't trust CNN as far as I can throw them anyway. They're probably one of the most unreliable news sources in the country, you know, them and, you know, all 12 of their viewers. But it was interesting because earlier today on CNN, a criminology professor went on and made this really crazy statement, and he was challenged by, you know, the host on the show, and the professor said that mass shootings are not, I repeat, are not an epidemic according to data. But you wouldn't know that. And again, this is Dr. James Allen Fox. He's from Northeastern University up in Boston. And he went on the air today, and it was amazing to see an academic publicly do that, because all you see, for the most part, in the liberal media is this narrative of, like, mass shootings are an epidemic, we're at the, you know, the apocalypse is upon us. When you hear that narrative from the liberal media, who has been very irresponsible, in my opinion, in how to portray the gun argument or to portray exactly what should work best, when you hear that, what does the data tell you? Because, again, if one academic is finding this information, I know it's readily available. Are mass shootings an epidemic in the country?
No, mass shootings aren't an epidemic. I read a lot. I just read something like that in National Review as well. It's just obviously, you know, nobody cares about the 30 kids a month that get killed in Chicago, right? I mean, nobody cares about that.
Absolutely.
Correct. But when we see a mass shooting where 17 kids or 12 kids, it's heart-wrenching. But I think the other thing the media does, and conservative media is guilty as well, I will never post pictures of these mass shooters on my social media because I think there's other kids out there watching that going, wow, look at the notoriety, look at the fame. I can do better than that. I can kill more. I can get the high score on the video game, so to speak. So I think the press continually perpetuates it over and over again, almost glorifying that person. It's to a point where it's sick now. You know, there's that old saying, if it bleeds, it leads. And the press, obviously, the Fourth Estate is almost all liberal. These people live in a bubble. You know, like college professors, too, no offense, but, you know, once they have tenure, you're working part-time, you're surrounded by the same people, all the coastal elites on both sides. What these people do not realize is you can't eat an iPhone app. Somebody has to plant a seed, someone has to grow it, someone has to pick it, truck it, prepare it, and serve it to you. And they look down upon those people. I was in Clifton the other day, Professor. I went to Bruno's Pizzeria, and I was watching people walking in and out of the dollar store, the discount grocery store next to it. These are people that probably make $20,000 or $30,000 a year. Hardworking, salt-of-the-earth people, every size, shape, and color. And I'm thinking, wow. The people in our colleges and the people in the media should stand out here or walk a week in these people's shoes, and they would have a different perception of how the world really runs.
You know what? That's a great observation. That's a great observation.
Yes.
And you know what? And one of the things that frustrates me about my colleagues in academia, and I certainly don't paint with a broad brush, but, you know, being someone that's very middle of the road, when you're dealing with people that are overtly liberal, I mean, there's at times there's no talking about this issue, and if you're not on cracking down on the NRA, or if you're not on cracking down on gun laws and making it more difficult to, you know, purchase a weapon, I tell my colleagues all the time, it's like, you know, criminals don't follow laws, you know, and that's one of the things that I think gets lost in this. And, you know, whether or not we can have a debate of how easily accessible it is to purchase firearms illegally in the country, we can have that debate, Anthony, of course. But I think that what tends to happen, and tell me if I'm wrong on this, more often than not, when these emotional incidents happen, we see the knee-jerk reactions by the media, by activists, whether it's celebrities who sometimes don't know their elbow from you know where, to elected officials. And there seems to be this sort of insistence on a knee-jerk reaction. But I'm always the type of person that cautions that because, you know what, let's think about – listen, I'm an academic, so for me everything's about rational thought and logic. And I get it. Emotion is always inserted into the conversation. But when you hear a lot of the knee-jerk reactions in the national media or by elected officials, do you ever reach out to them? What's your feeling at that moment? Do you ever just feel furious or are you just desensitized to this?
I kind of live in a bubble owning a gun range. Most people come in tend to be either middle or leaning to the right, some hard right. So I don't have much exposure to that. I do get people that come in here that have an ACLU card and an NRA card in their wallet. I also get people come in here that are alternate lifestyle that come in and shoot in my range and will debate issues, you know. And it's for me, it's hard because I don't know how – I don't understand the progressive mindset, how we could live in a world that has no rules, no borders, you know, everything goes. What's going to happen is eventually, just like socialism, everything's going to drop down to the lowest common denominator, and we're all going to lose this wonderful lifestyle that we enjoy as Americans. I've traveled all over the world, and I hate to say it for you listeners out there, there is still no better country in the world. You can turn a water faucet on anywhere and drink it. I've been to 30 countries where you can't do that. People don't understand the type of world that we live in. I think every kid that grows up in America, every snot-nosed teenager, should spend 6 weeks in a summer in a third-world country. They'd come back with a different outlook on life. So I've tried to talk to people on the left, and I don't know. It's like pulling a mule up a ladder.
Wow,
it really
that's
is.
A really good analogy. That's a really good analogy, Anthony. The language, the language that's being conveyed on a national level about what we as regular citizens should have access to has come under considerable debate, specifically when the narrative comes out that, let's say, AR-15s are being used in a good portion of these recent mass shootings in the last, I don't know, 5 years, for example. I mean, I know other handguns
yep.
as well, but the bottom line is the narrative about as citizens, as regular taxpayers, should we have access to that type of weaponry? And when you hear that narrative, what's your response?
The reason the AR style rifle is used in 9 out of 10 of these shootings is because 90% of the rifles that are sold are an AR style gun. It's the most popular rifle because it's tactical and it's modular and it looks cool. But the AR black rifle is no different than a brown rifle, a wood rifle with a box magazine. It does the same thing. It's just that because it's so popular and it's so tactical looking, because everybody wants something that the police or the military has. Professor, it would be like saying if 90% of all the cars on the road were Toyota Camrys, then Toyota Camrys would be in more accidents than any other car. So the AR, all they do is they're demonizing the black rifle because of the way it looks. If they ban the black rifle altogether, and then 2 years later, tragically, there's 3 or 4 mass shootings with a wood rifle, what do we do next? We're going to ban the wood
wow.
rifle then, right? Okay, we're just going to keep going down. It's a slippery slope here. We need to look at the root cause. What transpired? What made this kid get to this point? How many other kids are out there that are like this, desensitized and brainwashed? Listen, my stress level's up all the time, too. I stopped watching the 24-hour news cycle. I read now because I used to watch MSNBC, CNN, Fox flip around and everything. My blood pressure would go through the ceiling watching all of this propaganda. And I'm thinking, you know what? I have my life, my family, and my business. I can't control what's going on with North Korea or what Trump tweeted out today. So I'm not going to worry about it anymore. I'm only going to worry about what I can control. And I feel a lot better.
Well, speaking of the president, and I know that the president, when he was a candidate running in 2016, was certainly one that spoke to a specific audience in the country about the preservation of the Second Amendment. I know whether it was today or yesterday, I know he put out a tweet that some Second Amendment advocates are concerned about. And whether, you know, again, we know that the president sometimes tweets out things in a knee-jerk reaction. He sometimes doesn't think when he tweets out. And, you know, that's probably my biggest criticism of the president. But when you've heard that or read about it, do you see that sort of going anywhere? Or is it just sort of like part of the news cycle? Okay, it'll go away in a day or two. Nothing's going to come of it. Or when you hear that language, for example, how concerned are you?
You know, other than Russia, everything disappears in 2 or 3 days with this 24-hour news cycle. So nothing says concerns me. I mean, yesterday he was like, let's take away the guns and we'll worry about due process later. And I've heard a ton of gun people freak out over that. And I'm like, listen, this is just Trump talking because he just talks from emotion. And then his people, his handlers are going to talk to him, and he's going to backtrack on it, and it's going to get massaged, and it's going to get politicized. You know, we have a federal government that is so inept. I'm talking every branch. They're so inept, the lack of communication, the lack of crossing the aisle to work together. And we, the people in the middle, suffer. I almost feel like it's rigged. Like Professor, you're a Democrat, I'm a Republican. We go in a back room and say, all right, listen,
Anthony, let me be very clear. I'm a registered independent.
Okay.
I can tell you this much. I have not voted for a Democrat for president in quite some time. Now,
Go ahead.
The reason I say that is because I know for the most part, you know, I know last election I wrote myself in. I didn't really feel comfortable voting for either candidate, you know, but I really don't vote for a Democrat for president only because I think there are a lot of issues that I don't agree with in terms of certain progressive values. But there's no question, Anthony, that I think both parties are doing us a disservice. I mean, I think people that don't want to admit that, I think, are either overly partisan or they're just not paying attention and reading enough. But both parties are doing us an immense disservice. I'm sorry, continue.
But it's like they do backroom deals where I say, listen, Professor, I'm going to beat you up publicly on this bill, and then you're going to cave for me, and then next time I'll do it for you, all right? Yeah, and we high-five each other, and then I go out and I tear you apart, and everybody's like, oh, look at Anthony. He's so tough on the issues, and he protects us. And that. It's all a game. It's all a game. Telling you right now, and we're just the pawns in the middle of it. We have no control over it. It's lousy. It's lousy. And, you know, look at how much inaction. Obama had the House, the Senate, and the executive branch. Trump, the House, the Senate, the executive branch. They can't get anything done. Nobody gets anything done.
No, it's disappointing. It's disappointing. Now, keeping it here in New Jersey, I know that our United States senators have expressed specific views about gun reform and gun laws. Have you reached out to the offices of Senator Menendez and Senator Booker, respectively, and how successful has that been at all?
I get stock letters back from them, always with I respect the Second Amendment, but blah 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 blah. So you can't even talk to them. So they're just so far left, so far gone. There's no way to talk to those guys.
Wow.
So there's no common ground there.
Now, going back to Governor Murphy, do you feel that the legislature, and obviously it's predominantly Democratic in both chambers of the legislature here in New Jersey, do you feel that the governor might just sort of get like a free ride from the legislature in terms of whatever bills they put out there? The governor will just sign, or do you think that at some point the legislature might just sort of put the brakes on and say, wait a minute, let's think about this. Let's think about commonsensical gun laws in New Jersey. Let's think about commonsensical gun reform, for example. Do you see that happening here?
No, because for 8 years, everything the Assembly and Senate sent to Christie vetoed. So they've been waiting with bated breath for the past 8 years for this moment. They're going to throw everything and anything that they can think of anti-gun, because they don't know if they're not going to have a Democratic governor in 4 years, so they're going to push through everything that they possibly can. It's coming for sure.
One of the things,
it's going to be bad.
Well, one of the things, Anthony, that stands out for me, and, you know, certainly I wanted to get you on here because, you know, I respect you as one of the preeminent Second Amendment advocates that I know anywhere. But aside from just the concerns about guns in New Jersey, what else concerns you about Governor Murphy?
Well, I'm worried about this whole sanctuary state thing. I'm worried about free college. I'm worried about free everything as a taxpayer who pays exorbitant state property, business taxes, corporate taxes, payroll taxes, and everything else you can imagine. I'm just worried about that. I mean, we're already the highest tax state. We're the number one state people moving out of. We're number three worst state to retire in. I mean, what is our legacy here for ourselves, our family, our kids, and our business? I mean, most people can't afford to live here anymore. This is not the way it's supposed to be. So I'm just concerned. You know, Winston Churchill, favorite quote from him, he says, trying to tax yourself out of prosperity is like a man standing in a bucket and lifting himself up by the handles.
You know what? That's a great quote. That's a great quote. I mean, you know what? I cannot have said it better than that.
We're just going to keep taxing. Now they're trying to figure out where our real estate taxes, our charity thing, the IRS will stand for that for about 3 seconds. You know, this concerns me. You know, again, I find nothing more repulsive than a rich socialist. This guy pays $250,000 a year property taxes on his house. He's worth like $700 million. He needs to go stand outside that dollar store and watch those people walking in and out. Everybody's so out of touch. I'm not an advocate of this medical marijuana either. I'm not an advocate of alcohol either. I'd rather have sin taxes. I think we should tax the crap out of stuff like that. I smoke cigars. I'd pay more money for a cigar. I don't drink, but if I did, I'd pay more money to drink. You want to fund stuff, fund it with sin taxes. But to have a blue-collar person and tax them another $3,000-$4,000 a year to pay for all these social service programs, our system is broke. It's horrible.
Well, you know what? That's a really interesting perspective about a sin tax. I've not thought of that. That seems really interesting. That's something I might want to talk about on the show in the future. Anthony, when it comes to the gun control lobby or the gun control advocacy, is there anything on their side of the aisle that they get right?
No. And again, neither side will give a centimeter, right? We're both fighting over everything. We all know that their ultimate goal is to ban everything because they would like to take guns away completely. And so the pro-gun people won't move an inch either. We'll fight to the death on it, which is a shame because there is leeway on both sides to get together on it. But no, they don't get it right because they think going from a 15-round magazine to a 10-round magazine is going to slow down someone committing a crime. No criminal ever said, hey, Fernando, you don't have those 15-round magazines when we go rob that gas station because we don't want to get charged with that. We're going to rob a gas station. We don't care if we have 10-round, 15-round, or 100-round magazines. So criminals don't follow the rules, but the gun control advocates, they think that passing laws is going to help. No law would have stopped that kid in Florida from doing what he did. So it's amazing.
Well, is it fair to say that whether any gun law would have stopped the kid in Florida or the gentleman in Las Vegas or other school shootings? Because we hear that narrative, right? We hear that narrative on a national level that, you know, if stricter gun laws were in effect, or we limited the amount of weaponry that is available for purchase, that could go a long way, which sort of lends me back to the point I made before about, you know, a lot of residents might say, Anthony, you know, I get it. I want to own a firearm. I want to protect my home. I want to own a specific type of firearm. But, you know, I don't need an AR-15 or AR-15 type of rifle that you mentioned, for example, the automatic type of weapon. I don't need that. I don't think that should be available. Like, if you're not in the military or if you're not in law enforcement, you shouldn't have access to it. When you hear that narrative, whether it's on the national level or on the state level, it's easy to sort of – I mean, I know you don't get tripped up because you're very quick on your feet. But when you hear that narrative, what's the best response to it?
Well, that semi-automatic rifle is no different than any semi-automatic rifle that's been in production for the past 100 years in this country. You're just discriminated against that rifle because the way it looks. It's not a military rifle. It is not full auto. Every time you squeeze the trigger, one bullet comes out, and when the magazine is empty, it has to be reloaded again. It's a very small caliber rifle. It's used for sporting purposes, and it's my right to own that gun. It's legal federally, so it's my right to own that gun. Just like it's your right to not own that gun if you choose not to.
Anthony, if someone were to say to you, you know, I'm a regular citizen, I live, you know, in a suburb, I just want a firearm, I don't need a rifle of that magnitude. When you've heard that talking point, is it just maybe a person trying to say, like, you know what, I'm a regular person, I don't need that sort of arsenal in my home? Or when you do hear it, does that sort of make that specific person easier to scrutinize when they talk when we're talking about, you know?
Yeah, it's easier to scrutinize. But if I tell people having a gun in a house is like having a fire extinguisher, better to have one and never have to use it than not have one and wish you did, right? So an AR-15 is not for everybody. It's not a great gun for home defense, to be quite honest with you. I mean, I would like to own one if, like, there was another Hurricane Sandy and you have no police or electric or gas for 10 days. It's good to have something like that to fend off, you know, any intruders or looters or anything. But for the house, a shotgun or a handgun with a couple of boxes of ammo locked up in a safe, again, Professor, better to have it and never use it than not have it and wish you did.
You know what? That is an excellent observation. And I did want to say, Anthony, real quick, I know you have to go in a few minutes, right? I mean, I'm not sure how much more time you have. Okay. I just want to sort of wrap up here with you because I know you're a very popular guy tonight, as we'll see on Fox News tonight. What real quick here, what shows will you be on tonight on Fox News?
I will be on this Saturday. I will be on Waters World with Jesse Waters. It'll be on Fox News 8 p.m. and again 11 p.m. We're doing a thing on the AR-15 rifle.
Oh, wow. Okay. Just a couple just a couple minutes here. Any information about Gun for Hire for our listeners tonight in terms of, you know, any social media, any upcoming events, about workshops, about any helpful seminars that promote responsible gun ownership and responsible gun practices that you're offering, sir?
Sure. The website is gunforhire.com, and we're in West Paterson, New Jersey, right on the Clifton border. And if you go on our website, you'll see a ton of classes. We offer basic pistol classes. We have home defense classes. We have a class called Civilian Response to an Active Shooter. If you're in a mall or a hospital or a school and there's an active shooter, we tell unarmed civilians, we give you all the tips. We have SWAT members that teach it on what to do. Like, Professor, first thing you should do, if there's an active shooter in Sears and you hit the deck, you know the first thing you should do?
What's that?
Put your phone on silent, because if the active shooter's walking by and your Mickey Mouse phone ring goes off, you've just given up your secret location. So we teach stuff like that to people.
Wow, that's fantastic.
To be prepared.
That's fantastic.
We have home invasion classes, self-defense classes, CPR, first aid. So check out our website or come on down and learn the safe and responsible use of firearms.
Anthony, you offer an incredible service to the community. Real quick before I let you go, because I always have my guests on here, and you know what, you've been a gentleman for coming on, for answering some tough questions, but now the floor is yours to grill me or ask the question of your favorite host here. So the floor is yours. If you want to grill me, now's your chance.
No, I don't want to grill you. I love you. I think you're a great guy. I love what you do for your community. I love what you do for the charities. I get involved in that every year. I think we have to stick together. I have a lot of love for everybody, and, you know, love trumps all. Oh, I said Trump's name there, didn't I? He wasn't my first guy, by the way. I was a Ted Cruz guy, by the way.
Wow, okay. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Well, Anthony, I know you have to go. I know you're needed tonight on some other program, so I appreciate your valuable time tonight. I hope you enjoyed the time here on Politically Direct. Please tell everybody you know about the show, about the podcast, about this show, and hopefully you can just get everybody to listen every week here on Insider NJ with Politically Direct. And listen, I'd like to have you back on in April or May just to sort of follow up with this and more updates about what's going on, especially with Trenton and what's going on with legislation right now that's pending, you know, in the legislature. So I appreciate your time, Anthony. Thanks for calling in tonight, and God bless you, sir. You do great things.
You too. Love you, man. Be safe.
Love you as well, man. I'll talk to you soon. All right, folks, here on the program, have a great night. All right, folks, here on the program, as we get to the top of the hour here on the East Coast, here, 7 o'clock here in the Blog Talk Radio studios here in Union City, folks. A great interview there with Anthony Calandro, very well-respected Second Amendment advocate here on the program tonight. Certainly, you know, a special start time this evening, earlier than we usually do the program. Anthony does have some commitments tonight to do on other programs, and certainly I value his time here and really answering some very important questions, folks, when it comes to responsible gun ownership in New Jersey and how difficult it is overall, I think, to try to get the ball rolling if you're interested as a citizen. So, folks, again, listen, toll-free number tonight, 818-572-8032, if you wish to call in and opine about my interview tonight with Anthony Calandro from Gun for Hire. Again, very well-respected Second Amendment advocate and a responsible gun owner, certainly a very profitable business that he has in Woodland Park. I'm very grateful to him and certainly his support of my philanthropy, but also just of the program. I love the way he's shared publicly, direct on his social media, and really getting people out there. So, hey, if you tune in tonight, give me a call, 818-572-8032. If you want to give me your opinion about what Anthony discussed tonight about gun laws in New Jersey, how difficult it is, his opinions about Governor Murphy, and certainly the challenges that responsible gun owners face here in the Garden State as a result of the governor's rhetoric. So certainly we'll see how it progresses in the weeks and months ahead in Trenton as it pertains, again, to the legislature for sure. So, again, folks, 818-572-8032. Call in. I'd like to hear from you tonight about anything having to do with tonight's topic about gun reform and gun rights or anything going on here in the Garden State, folks. So I just want to sort of go over some important things here on the news rundown tonight. And a very interesting story I came across looking at something as it pertains to some pending legislation in Trenton right now. Coming up, well, a couple of days ago, state lawmakers, and, you know, a good article out of NJ.com as it pertains to letting inmates vote from prison, and that's a goal of certain New Jersey lawmakers. Now, again, a good article a couple of days ago on NJ.com, and it reads as follows. State lawmakers on Monday announced legislation that would return voting rights to nearly 100 people locked up in prison or serving parole or probation in New Jersey. If passed, it would make New Jersey the third state in the country to allow people to vote while serving prison sentences. Now, the charge is being led by members of the New Jersey Legislative Black Caucus, who say laws prohibiting inmates from voting disproportionately hurt black New Jerseyans. State Senator Ronald Rice, a Democrat out of Essex County, went on to say, quote, there is no relationship between voting and committing crimes. To disenfranchise those who have made mistakes and are paying for them is wrong. Now, it will likely face opposition from Republican lawmakers in Trenton, one of whom said Monday that voters, quote, shouldn't trust inmates to choose elected officials. Now, currently in the state of New Jersey, folks, New Jersey residents with criminal records are allowed to vote, but only after they have completed their sentence and paid back any restitution or court fees. The proposed law would allow inmates to vote absentee in their home district. Now, research from the New Jersey Institute for Social Justice, which supports new legislation, demonstrated that 94,000 people with criminal convictions are currently denied the right to vote, a population larger than New Jersey's actual state capital, which is Trenton. Now, advocates at the State House press conference that took place on Monday noted New Jersey has a severe racial disparity in its prison population, despite similar offense rates between black and white residents. Now, a bill co-sponsor, State Senator Sandra Cunningham, here in Hudson County, a Democrat that I know personally, said lawmakers introduced a bill on Monday to commemorate the 1869 passage by Congress of the 15th Amendment, which gave black men the right to vote. She also noted that New Jersey was one of seven states which initially opposed the amendment before approving it once it became law. Senator Cunningham went on to say, quote, we're still refusing 150 years later, and we haven't grown at all. Clear whether or not the bill will have the support of top Democrats in the state. Now, a report from Governor Phil Murphy's transition team endorsed giving voting rights to those on parole and probation, but stopped short of saying inmates should vote. A spokesman for the governor's office said Monday the governor supports expanding voter enfranchisement, but did not indicate whether he would support the actual bill. Now, Dan Bryan, a spokesman for the governor, went on to say that he believes we are a better, stronger, and more representative democracy when more New Jerseyans participate. The governor looks forward to working with the legislature to pass legislation that expands access to the ballot. Now, there are some dissenting voices here in New Jersey, and that one coming from, for example, State Senator Gerald Cardinale, a Republican out of Bergen County. Now, he released a statement Monday through his office saying that losing the right to vote is part of the risk that inmates assume when they break the law, and part of the incentive structure for people to follow the law. Cardinale said, "Do we really believe that murderers and rapists who are serving prison sentences should be allowed to influence elections and public policy?" Now, at the press conference, State Senator Rice rejected the notion that taking away the right to vote is an effective crime deterrent. He said, again in the statement, there's no one that's going to rob a bank or break into a house that would say, hey, you do that again, I'm going to take your voting rights away. And that's going to deter anybody. No one's ever said that. And of course, I'm going to be a better person if someone takes away my rights. Well, you know, and again, a nice job there by NJ.com this week covering this issue, and whether or not this bill sees the light of day remains to be seen. But, you know, folks, let me tell you something. You know, this caught my eye on the news cycle here in New Jersey. And, you know, good job there by NJ.com. Talk about this. And, you know, I talked about this on my local podcast, which I do on Wednesday nights here in Hudson County, Talking the Hudson. Check it out, folks, if you have a chance, www.blogtalkradio.com/Talking the Hudson every Wednesday night live at 9 p.m. And I talked about this because certainly whether it's Hudson County or other counties in the state, certainly there's a high percentage of inmates within our prison system that come from our county or whatever have you. And when I read this, it concerned me. It concerned me for a couple of reasons. Listen, and I've said this before on the program, before getting into academia, you know, I was a very proud state employee working for state government and different criminal justice agencies for 10 years. So I certainly have an understanding of our criminal justice system in New Jersey. Now, you know, I know one of the things that, and I've had the pleasure to speak with State Senator Cunningham on my other podcast, where she talked about antiquated drug laws and certainly how outdated drug laws disproportionately discriminate against black and brown people. Now, she's right on that sense because I've seen it firsthand. And certainly a lot of the message and the narrative as it pertains to decriminalization of marijuana, specifically in New Jersey, will only benefit black and brown people because, again, they've been disproportionately discriminated against. So there's no argument there, folks. My concern with this language, and I have not read the bill. I've reached out to both offices from state senators mentioned in the article to try to find out exactly more information about what this bill entails. Now, if you're telling me that you're a low-level drug offender or you're someone that was arrested and convicted of public drunkenness or, I don't want to say public indecency. Let me be very clear. Drunken disorderly or public drunkenness or low-level type of crimes, I don't have an issue with allowing you to vote again. Now, again, if you've served your time, if you've paid the restitution and any applicable fines due to your conviction, I'm all for that. So let me be very clear. What I don't like is the fact of if you're a convicted rapist, sex offender, you've committed a homicide, you've committed any sort of sexual assault, you've killed a police officer, you've committed violent robberies, I don't think you're the type of person that deserves the right to vote again. I think that these are people that have committed heinous, and deplorable and despicable acts against society. Those are not the people I'm concerned with. So if they're losing their right to vote, no offense to anybody here, I'm not really going to cry over this. I'm not. Again, let me be very clear. If we're talking about people that have been convicted of low-level offenses, you know, felonies or even misdemeanors, and they've served any sort of jail time, again, I'm not opposed to these individuals voting. Okay, serve your time, pay your fines, pay your restitution. Okay, that's all completed. I can have that discussion with you where I will say, you know what, I'm not opposed to these individuals voting again. Okay, but if you're going to tell me, and again, I don't know the specifics of the bill. I have reached out to both offices, again, as I mentioned, of both State Senator Rice and also State Senator Cunningham to get the specifics about this. But if someone's going to tell me tonight that they think convicted rapists, sex offenders, cop killers, murderers, you know what, drug dealers, drug traffickers, if you're going to sit there and tell me that these people deserve the right to vote again, I'm sorry. I don't know what you're drinking. I don't know what you're smoking, but I'll tell you, it must be really good because it has completely clouded your judgment. And I'm not trying to be insulting to anybody here, folks, but it just sounds crazy to me to hear someone even try to convey this narrative. So again, I don't want to sort of indict the bill. I don't want to sort of judge it before the specifics get out there. And listen, I understand about disenfranchising voters. I've heard that narrative. I've heard that talking point. And no one's saying that, you know, we shouldn't have, you know, equal access to voting. I'm not saying that. But again, folks, what we're talking about here is trying to expand the voting base to a specific demographic. Now, listen, let me be very clear here. I don't think we're fooling anybody about what the intent is here. If there's an intent by the Democratic Party in New Jersey to get more votes, yes, I get it. This is certainly one way. I mean, let's be honest about it. Anybody who doesn't see through this, I think, is really, really delusional. But let me just give the benefit of the doubt and say that there is something noble about this endeavor. I agree with you. As I just said, I think if you're a low-level person that's been convicted, I can understand the remedy about, restoring that right to vote. But there's no way you can tell me that some of the most heinous criminals that are currently incarcerated in our state prisons deserve the right to vote. I'm sorry. And that's not me being racist. That's not me being bigot, because I'm not. This is not a racist comment. This is not a bigoted opinion. It's a commonsensical opinion. So I'm really concerned when I hear this. And when it caught my eye right away, as soon as I read about it, again, on the news cycle. So I don't know about you, but this is something that, quite frankly, I think we should keep an eye out for, because, folks, I think it's wrong. I think it sends the wrong message. It sends the wrong message that, like, you know, if you commit a heinous crime of any kind, that there's no repercussions. Yes, your freedom's taken away, you know, by being incarcerated, but you should lose other privileges, okay? I understand that the right to vote is, again, it's a right, okay? It's a civil liberty here in the United States that we should never take for granted. But when you take a heinous act, I'm sorry, okay? And I've already listed the amount of different type of offenders. You should not be able to vote. I'm sorry. That's not right. And I think anybody who wants to argue that, I think just doesn't – listen, I don't want to call you immoral. I don't want to call you someone that lacks values. But I just think that, you know, your outrage is misplaced. I think it's misplaced. I think it really, really is. I think it's – you are really just, you know – I don't think – you're really exercising a lot of rational thought here. I think you're allowing yourself to get wrapped up in emotion and to sort of go with, you know, the variables of, well, you know, we're trying to, you know, take away the disenfranchisement that's existed for people that have been convicted and that, you know, that are parolees or probationers. Again, I'm not trying to even take those rights away from those people that have committed low-level type of felonies. But there's no way someone can convince me that a murderer, that a rapist, that a child molester, that a cop killer, that a drug trafficker, that you should have the right to vote again. You've committed some despicable acts against society. There's no way we can put them in the same category as someone who got arrested for public drunkenness. Or if someone, you know, shoplifted. I'm not trying to say shoplifting is not a big deal. Of course it is. But, you know, we can have a conversation about low-level offenders. But if you commit a violent robbery, if you commit sexual assault, I mean, you're just not a good person, okay? You're the very worst in our society, and you deserve to be locked away for as long as possible, if not put to death, okay? Because some of these acts are so heinous. So, no, you shouldn't get the right to vote back. I'm sorry. And anyone who thinks otherwise, respectfully, I think you're crazy. I think you I think your value system is convoluted, and I think that you really need to sit down and assess exactly, you know, your morals, because I'm sorry, there's no way you can explain this to me. There just isn't. There really, really isn't. And again, as I said, we'll find out as the specifics become available as it pertains to this bill. But, you know, I hope I'm wrong when it comes to what we're assuming or what's being speculated on as it pertains to this. So, I don't know. Folks, again, 818-572-8032, toll-free number tonight. Call in. I want to hear from you tonight. I want to hear about your thoughts on my interview with Second Amendment advocate Anthony Calandro from Gun for Hire in Woodland Park. Certainly, this pending bill in the legislature as it pertains to restoring voter rights, certainly a very controversial issue, to say the very least here. And, folks, again, as we continue on here with our news rundown here on Politically Direct, folks, again, 818-572-8032. Don't be shy. Toll free. Call in. I want to hear from you tonight about everything that going on here tonight. Folks, a couple other things here on the Insider NJ website, a very, very interesting column. You know what, it was a great forum that took place yesterday. Certainly waiting to hear back from some of the comments and feedback. A great symposium that took place at the Grand Conference Room at the Raritan Valley Community College in Branchburg, New Jersey. A lot of elected officials were on hand to talk about the impact of marijuana legalization on communities of color in New Jersey. Certainly waiting to hear back. I know the panel was moderated by our own Max Pizarro, a great colleague of mine here at Insider NJ. So waiting to hear back on some of the logistics of how well this symposium went. And folks, you know, listen, I've talked about this at length here on the show when it comes to legalization and decriminalization. First and foremost, and again, as I said to you before, you know, our drug laws in New Jersey are antiquated. They're extremely outdated. And again, as someone who worked in the criminal justice system before getting into academia and teaching, again, in higher education, I've seen firsthand what outdated drug laws do. And I applaud the legislature for really trying to address decriminalization. I think, we are incarcerating far too many black and brown people in New Jersey, and we're doing it at a much higher rate than their white counterparts, and that's unfortunate. And I'm hoping that when we see bills being introduced to decriminalize marijuana in New Jersey, I think that's a great step, you know, it's a good first step in the right direction, excuse me, as it pertains. And if you've been listening the last couple of weeks here on the program, folks, I've had some very good guests, both from SAM, Smart Approaches to Marijuana, and also the New Jersey Cannabis Industry Association, that have given us some very different perspectives about decriminalization. I mean, I know they're pretty much on the same page when it comes to that, but both organizations and representatives that I interviewed in the last couple of weeks had some very distinct views when it came to outright legalization. And so, as I said to you last week on the show when I talked to them, listen, I'm still on the fence about it. There are still some serious public safety concerns that are at the top of my list, things that I'm still researching and trying to come up with maybe a more concrete opinion about what's going on and what could happen in New Jersey. We'll find out, but, you know, it's important to have these panels, and I'm glad to see that legislators and also attorneys, you know, criminal defense attorneys, attend these sort of functions, talk to residents, to talk to the constituents and say, this is what we're trying to do here. And I think that, listen, if for nothing else, it's something that, quite frankly, I think could be very, very beneficial in terms of the narrative in trying to understand exactly what could work in New Jersey, what won't work in New Jersey, as opposed to other states that have legalized recreational marijuana, and we'll find out. But again, nice job there by Insider NJ, specifically Max Pizarro, to moderate this great symposium yesterday. Certainly we'll wait to see results in terms of the feedback from people that attended, certainly from other elected officials that were in attendance yesterday. So definitely, I think it's worth finding out for sure. And, you know, again, folks, it's one of those things where the more you know, the more you read, the more we investigate and research, the better informed we're going to be, I think, as a population, as taxpayers, as voters, obviously. when it comes to these sort of issues that are, quite frankly, generate a lot of debate and a lot of controversy here on the daily news cycle, for sure. So, well, folks, listen, it's about that time, and really it's flown by today. And, again, first off, I want to start off by thanking Anthony Calandro, a very well-respected Second Amendment advocate here in the state of New Jersey, reputable business owner out of Woodland Park, New Jersey, right off of Route 46 up here in North Jersey. If you have a chance, check him out, gunforhire.com. It's a wonderful establishment. I've gone there shooting on a few occasions. It's very therapeutic. It's fun. It really is fun. And it's informative. It's insightful. You learn about responsible gun ownership and about responsible gun maintenance. So, again, cheers to Anthony Calandro, a very well-respected Second Amendment advocate here in the Garden State. I feel really bad for him that his experience in Trenton with the legislature did not go, better. And I'm saddened to hear that his experience was very unpleasant. And, you know, shame on the legislators that sat there. Shame on them for dismissing responsible gun owners. And shame on them for dismissing people that, you know, want to be advocates, again, for a healthy discussion as it pertains to the Second Amendment. And I'm really grateful for people like Anthony who go out there each and every day, not just by owning a small business, but by being an advocate and by going on, talk shows and programs to talk about this. And listen, I'm super happy for him. I know he'll be on Fox News later on tonight to talk about this issue. I mean, listen, we both know that CNN and MSNBC won't, you know, invite someone like Anthony onto the show, because that will require CNN and that will require MSNBC to have integrity and some sort of intellectual honesty. And we both know, we all know CNN doesn't have any of that. And I think we know that MSNBC definitely doesn't have any of that, for sure. So kudos to Anthony, and cheers to Fox News. I know that might not be a popular comment to make tonight. I don't care. Cheers to Fox News for having responsible people like Anthony Calandro on in the coming days. I know he's taping something tonight that'll air later this week. So cheers to him for being an advocate, for being a strong, intelligent voice for responsible gun owners in New Jersey and even throughout the country. I know he's traveled all across the 50 states to talk about this issue. So cheers to Anthony. And again, I thank him for his appearance tonight. And so we'll certainly have him back on later on in the spring, as we will see what these bills in the legislature end up becoming, whether or not they progress or whether or not they end up being signed. We'll see in the weeks and months ahead there. So again, folks, don't forget to check out Insider NJ on a daily basis by going to www.insidernj.com for the best coverage of the political scene throughout the state of New Jersey, folks. You know what? Insider NJ just celebrated 1 year online, and I can tell you that their traffic, that their contributors, everyone working for Insider NJ, I'm telling you, is doing a stand-up job to bring you the most up-to-date information, the best journalism you can definitely find, and it's always courtesy of Insider NJ. And listen, as a broadcast journalist, I take this responsibility seriously to come out here and give you facts, to give you information, and you can decide for yourself. But believe me, when it comes to responsible journalism, the very best analysis and commentary, you can always depend on Insider NJ, and always check them out, www.insidernj.com. You can do so from your PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. And again, if you missed any part of tonight's broadcast, folks, you can always go to www.blogtalkradio.com/politicallydirectNJ. Again, you can do that from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. If you have a topic or issue you want to hear about in the coming weeks, folks, please write to the show's inbox. I'd love to hear from you. politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Now, don't forget to follow the show on Instagram. We're getting many new likes and follows each and every day. @politicallydirectnj. You can also follow me directly on Instagram @your_favorite_Fernando. You can also follow me on Twitter @FernandoUribeJr. 5,000 plus followers and counting on Twitter, so I'm happy to see that. Don't forget to like Politically Direct on Facebook, folks. Again, I ask you to please do that. We're almost at 300 likes for the page. Let's try to get that done by the end of the week. I really appreciate it. I appreciate Anthony Calandro sharing my page and also Insider NJ promoting for Politically Direct. So whether it's on your morning commute, folks, getting a daily workout in, walking your dog, doing laundry, whether you're doing homework for my students, both past and present, tune in each and every week, and you'll be happy that you did. We do return to our regular scheduled time next Wednesday night, folks, at of 8 p.m., so make sure you tune in again. Never forget, it's real, it's here, it's politically direct. Good night. Cranford, New Jersey. Great suburb there in Union County. Great little town. Good night, Cranford. I'll see you next week, folks, on Blog Talk Radio. Again, happy Women's History Month to all the ladies listening tonight, for all your great contribution, for all the great women, both past and present, that have contributed to our great country. Again, happy Women's History Month, and we'll celebrate all month long here on Politically Direct. So I'll see you next week, folks, on Blog Talk Radio. Don't forget, let's keep on talking.